everybody, it's Laura. Today we're going to bring back our podcast, and today we have with us Kate Bellingham from Education, and Dr. Lee is going to talk to us about how to evaluate hypopituitary syndromes in the ICU.
Yes, thank you, Laura. I am going to be talking to you guys about some endocrinopathies that are relevant to the ICU because we recently had a case. They're relatively rare, but they do warrant urgent workup and ICU evaluation and admission. So the main thing I'm going to focus on is disease processes that can cause an acute hypopituitary findings. So typically these are things that are either mass effect growth or a catastrophic kind of destruction of the hypopituitary, the pituitary gland. So the typical presentations are a lot of metabolic derangements. So if you think about the pituitary, it secretes a lot of hormones that regulate a lot of our endocrine functions in our body and other endocrine glands in our body, namely adrenal glands, our kidneys, etc. Thyroid are the most common ones and most important ones. So if you have an acute dysfunction of your pituitary, a lot of those hormonal regulations stop and get disrupted, and you have a catastrophic shutdown of a lot of hormonal stimulation and secretion. So that can be life-threatening and cause the metabolic derangements we see. Typically, we see things like persistent hypoglycemia or hyperglycemia, symptoms of hypothyroidism, meaning bradycardia, hypothermia, edema, hemodynamic instability, or hypocortisolism, which is, you know, typically we see an adrenal insufficiency. So again, hemodynamic dysfunction, difficulty with glycemic control, et cetera. And some of these are, you know, more life-threatening than others. So the typical differential we care about is things, symptoms or disease processes that can cause your pituitary gland to be acutely dysfunctional, meaning acute inflammation, things like hypophysitis. So that is just inflammation of the pituitary gland that can be caused by lymphocytic infiltration of the pituitary gland, caused by underlying malignant processes. Chemotherapy agents sometimes cause it. That can be very acute, especially the current immunotherapies, and other underlying autoimmune diseases. Those are pretty rare. And more commonly, we would see more of like destruction of the pituitary gland, meaning ischemic destruction or necrosis or bleeding, like hemorrhagic destruction of the pituitary gland. That's typically called a pituitary apoplexy, which is the term that describes a large pituitary adenoma that suddenly becomes hemorrhagic, and so destruction of pituitary and also causing physical mass effect. It typically is very sudden, so symptoms are sudden onset, vision changes because of the location of where the pituitary gland lives in our brain, vision changes and ophthalmoplegia, so like vision diplopia is often because your eye movements are impaired, and then finally like very acute onset headaches, severe headaches. So those are the typical ones. But you also see all the metabolic derangements as well. And then the other very common thing we always learn about, something called Sheehan syndrome, which is very important in postpartum women. This is pituitary ischemia, acute ischemia after following birth. So that can happen. It's rare, but it can happen, and it causes an acute hypopit during the immediate postpartum time. So that's primarily in women also. So things that we care about that's ICU relevant are, you know, the absence of cortisol and the absence of thyroid hormones. So those are more the life-threatening. So we want to treat immediately for adrenal insufficiency with high-dose hydrocortisone or stress-dose steroids dosing. And then I also want to think about thyroid hormone replacement. Those are the most kind of life-threatening. And then obviously correcting the metabolic derangements and doing the workup. So typical workup includes just the most, like I said, the most life-threatening ones, which is a cortisol level and a TSH and free T4 level in the blood that can easily rule in or rule out these symptoms, and obviously don't delay in treatment. Obviously, if there is concern for either destruction of pituitary or mass effect, etc., imaging is very important, and then early involvement with neurocritical care and neurosurgery services to discuss surgical options if needed.
Any questions, Kate?
No, I learned so much.
Yeah.
Where would I start? Yeah.
I mean, like, I want to say overall it's a rare thing to see, like, an acute catastrophic, you know, hypopit symptom, but it happened to us, so I figure, and it wasn't life-threatening for the patient, and we ultimately did the appropriate workup, and he stabilized and gave us more time to do more of a workup, but this ended up being the diagnosis, so I wanted to, you know, provide, educated myself on it, and provide the education for everyone, so that we have a degree of suspicion for, you know, in the future when someone presents similarly.
And that was first found on the CAT scan? Is that how they found it originally?
Actually, no. He came in as a cold stroke because of neurologic symptoms. And the CT did not... CAT scan is typically not good resolution to look for in a PTU, unless it's giant. It's, you know, didn't pick it up, I don't believe. But he had a subsequent MRI of the brain, which showed enlargement. And so in my discussion with the neuro teams, both the surgical and the critical care teams, they obviously recommended a dedicated pituitary MRI, which just means they basically cut the slices thinner to have better resolution of such a small area, to better character and with contrast. So it better characterizes the anatomy, and it allowed them to make the decision whether the patient needed surgery or not. Typically, if they come in with like real symptoms of apoplexy, like I mentioned, like acute like watershed ischemia or hemorrhage, or a large mass that we see, I don't know if you need this kind of workup prior to decision for surgery. Obviously, there's more urgent indications for surgery if patient specifically has like vision field cuts or a headache and signs of bleeding in the brain.
So if the patient's being medically managed and they're not a surgical candidate, or it's been decided that that's not the best route for them, how quickly do you see the treatment working?
That's a good question. I think it depends on the situation, but in my discussion with endocrinology, sometimes the laboratory values do not coincide with the patient's clinical manifestation, as in with our gentleman, so we treat it empirically. But the expectation is that when you start high-dose steroids for stress-dose steroids for adrenal crisis, you should see the improvement pretty quickly. And so usually like a 24 to 48-hour kind of time period. And this gentleman did, it was slow to improve, but he did ultimately improve, and we're able to start weaning him, tapering off the hydrocortisone dosage. And she just mentioned, yeah, depending on the etiology of their hypopit, it dictates like the time course of how long this patient needs to be on the steroid. But for him, it sounded like he didn't need it for life. He just needed it for a short period, and she would repeat the testing as an outpatient.
Right. That was my next question, was like what the outlook is, like maintenance therapy going forward. So it depends, you're saying.
Yeah, I think the initial dosage can be rapidly tapered down to physiologic dosing of hydrocortisone. It's a short-acting steroid, but it's needed for adrenal insufficiency. So for just like outpatient dosing, it's like a BID dosing morning and evening, or morning and afternoon, and they can be maintained on that orally on discharge. So it doesn't need, the intense dosing is not needed until for a long time. It's a pretty quick taper. From my understanding.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lee.
You're welcome.
Always interesting. Thank you.
Thanks.